There's a moment in every heated argument when someone pauses, genuinely confused by a simple question they've never considered before. When did you choose your sexuality? When did you decide to be attracted to the people you're attracted to? The silence that follows reveals something profound. We hold countless strong opinions we've never truly examined. In an era of Brexit, Trump, and social media echo chambers, James O'Brien has built an unlikely career as a liberal talk radio host who doesn't shout, doesn't lecture, and doesn't counter-argue. Instead, he asks people to explain not just what they believe, but why, and then listens as they dismantle their own arguments. What emerges is a masterclass in critical thinking that feels less like political debate and more like watching someone gently remove the scaffolding holding up a house of cards. Political discourse today resembles a shouting match where the loudest voice wins. Cable news thrives on conflict, social media rewards outrage, and nuance disappears in favor of viral soundbites. Against this backdrop, O'Brien's approach feels almost subversive. He listens. Take Bob from Colchester, convinced immigration was overwhelming Britain. His only concrete example? Difficulty reaching the checkout at his local shop. Or Andy, claiming his Christian values were under assault despite not practicing Christianity. Pressed for specifics, he fabricated a story about Muslim-only prayer rooms at his daughter's school, then hung up when challenged the proof. These exchanges reveal passionate views shaped by media narratives rather than lived experience. When asked for actual examples, callers struggle or resort to invention. This disconnect serves powerful interests. Immigration myths conveniently excuse employers paying poverty wages, politicians underfunding public services, and developers refusing to build affordable housing. Tabloids stoke fears about immigrants driving down wages while their millionaire owners extract profits and pay immigrant staff minimum wage. People somehow enjoy being frightened, and selling tickets to the ghost train has always been more profitable than selling tickets to the scale. Growing up with an Irish surname in 1970s Britain, O'Brien experienced how entire communities get painted with the extremist brush. His father, a Daily Telegraph journalist, received hate mail accusing him of spreading Fenian propaganda and having blood of murdered children on his hands. O'Brien recognized that conflating ordinary Irish families with IRA bombers did the terrorists' work by fracturing society. After 9/11, he watched this pattern repeat with British Muslims, only worse. They face a double trauma, equally likely to be victims of terrorist attacks while simultaneously blamed for them. The 2016 Nice truck attack illustrates this cruel irony. Over a third of the 84 victims were Muslim, including the first to die, Fatima Sharihi, a mother of seven wearing a hijab. Yet after the Westminster Bridge attack, a photo of a Muslim woman in a headscarf looking at her phone near an injured victim went viral as supposed evidence of callousness. By the time both the woman and photographer explained she was calling for help, the damage was done. When callers insist all Muslims should apologize for terrorist attacks, O'Brien exposes the absurdity. How can Sunni and Shia Muslims, who kill each other every single day in Syria, be considered a monolithic group? This reveals the logical impossibility of demanding collective responsibility from 1.8 billion diverse individuals. Perhaps the most infamous manufactured outrage is Winterfall. For years, people insisted you weren't even allowed to celebrate Christmas anymore. The reality? Birmingham City Council briefly used Winterfall as an umbrella term for a winter festival featuring Christmas alongside Diwali and Chinese New Year. The promotional brochure featured Christmas three times on its cover, complete with the city's Christmas tree, carol singing, traditional decorations, and a Merry Christmas banner across the town hall. I still don't understand what Brexit supporters thought they won. O'Brien was baffled by people convinced they were oppressed by unelected bureaucrats in Brussels, yet unable to name a single EU law they wanted abolished. Andy the plumber admitted voting for Brexit despite knowing it would cause him short-term personal financial loss. When pressed about which EU laws he wanted to escape, he mentioned the shape of your bananas, a notorious Boris Johnson fabrication. He couldn't name a single actual law. His justification shifted to vague complaints about Brussels being very political before finally landing on immigration. Despite claiming not to be xenophobic, Andy complained about mobs of immigrants not willing to integrate in Nottingham. When asked how Brexit would address this since these people were already in the UK, he eventually suggested we could integrate them without human rights being involved. Sean from Uxbridge revealed the racial undertones when he complained about not seeing enough white faces in A&E. When challenged about which EU countries have predominantly non-white populations, he couldn't name any. He later complained about seeing too many Indian or Pakistani people behind supermarket tills, despite these demographics having nothing to do with EU membership. This aversion to critical thinking reached its apex with Theresa May's "Brexit means Brexit" slogan, a phrase designed to discourage thought while treating Brexit supporters as idiots who can be placated with fatuous soundbites. Those railing against political correctness claim you can't give offense, you only take it, yet rage about gay marriage, inclusive toilets, and gender-neutral clothing. They denounce unnecessary offense-taking while taking violent offense at innocuous actions they'd never know about without media-fueled outrage. When Jeff from Macclesfield called in, offended by John Lewis selling gender-neutral children's clothes, O'Brien asked why this bothered him. Jeff eventually admitted his real fear, that it might become illegal to refer to boys and girls separately. Yet he conceded it wouldn't change my sense of self and couldn't articulate any negative impact. This reveals the emptiness of political correctness gone mad complaints. People furious about imaginary problems that don't affect them, fed by media profiting from manufactured outrage. At its heart, sexism is about dominion, the belief that men should control women. Fiona, a city lawyer, described how a senior partner told her he loved the way she filled out her jeans. She felt deeply uncomfortable, disturbed by the realization he'd imagined her partially naked. This seemingly banal comment revealed how words, not just intention, create discomfort. What's normal has evolved dramatically. Doctors once advertised cigarettes. Marital rape wasn't criminalized in the UK until 1984. In January 2018, at the President's Club dinner, 360 wealthy men were entertained by 130 hostesses who signed non-disclosure agreements and reported being groped and propositioned. Society must establish conventions clear enough that any man behaving inappropriately knows he's transgressed. Days after Trump's inauguration, Sean Spicer falsely claimed Trump had the largest audience ever. When challenged, Kellyanne Conway introduced alternative facts, demonstrating how Trump's team corrupted the relationship between people and objective truth. Trump's appeal was rooted in white supremacy, not economic insecurity. At rallies, he openly mocked disabled journalists and Muslim Gold Star families. His strategy? Validate anger, provide targets, disable critical thinking, and offer self-serving narratives. Brian from Peterborough exemplifies this reality abandonment. When confronted with Trump's documented mocking of disabled people, he simultaneously denied it happened while claiming it was during the campaign. Supporters constantly shift arguments when cornered, moving from defending behavior to asking about the economy. By August 2017, white nationalists rallied in Charlottesville, leaving one counter-protester dead. Trump commented there were very fine people on both sides. Mike Godwin, creator of Godwin's Law, tweeted support for making Nazi comparisons. 8 months into Trump's presidency, violent racists marched unhooded on American streets. Journalism largely failed, prioritizing manufactured conflict over evidence-based reasoning, giving fringe voices equal airtime to scientific consensus. In a world dominated by those who shout loudest, O'Brien's quiet approach, asking, "Why do you think that?" might be the revolution we need. His method is simple. Listen carefully, then ask people to explain not just what they believe, but why. Request concrete examples from their own lives rather than media talking points. When they cite religious texts, ask what else those texts say. When they claim oppression, ask how it affects them personally. What emerges is rarely dramatic conversion, but something shifts, a seed of doubt gets planted, a contradiction becomes impossible to ignore, the scaffolding holding up the house of cards becomes visible. The path forward isn't about winning arguments, it's about reclaiming reason by refusing nonsensical answers and understanding people's real fears. In an era of alternative facts and algorithm-curated outrage, simply asking someone to explain their thinking and actually listening becomes a radical act. Once you demand evidence from lived experience rather than media narratives, the edifice of manufactured outrage begins to crumble.